Hello and welcome to Better by the Minute Life with Becca. My name is Becca Dukes, and each and every week I love bringing empowering information on different topics. I am starting this series that has to do with addiction, sobriety, and overcoming as a conqueror. And through that, we're also going to be sharing the hearts of parents and people on both sides of addiction. And the guest that I have with me right now is a very good friend, one that I have actually adopted as my sister, Ruth Ellen. Ruth Ellen has had quite a journey of her own. And the topic of this segment of the show is called Loving and Accepting Our Kids Through Their Journey. Ruth Ellen, share with us a little bit about your journey. Where did it start?
Thank you, Becca, and thanks for having me on the show. My journey began in Orange County, California. I was the third daughter of a pastor who was a children's evangelist. I have three other siblings, two older sisters and a younger brother. And we grew up in a very religious home. Our parents loved us very much, but being preacher's kids, that kind of made things a little difficult at times. We weren't allowed to dance, so we didn't get invited to dances, or when I got invited to dances, I had to turn down the boy I had a crush on, that I couldn't go dancing. And then he asked somebody else, and then they'd be together. At times it was kind of heartbreaking in that respect, but basically I had a good childhood. I started drinking when I was 13, wanted to fit in, be one of the cool kids, and it was fun. It made me feel like Superwoman. I could do anything. I was funny. I was cute. I was like whatever that I was insecure about. I was the opposite of that when I was drunk. And then I started to do other substances, marijuana, cocaine, speed. I liked things that made me feel up and kept me going. And then when I was 17, I got pregnant with my first child. And I got married because that was the right thing to do. And I stopped using while I was pregnant. Then in March, I had my first baby, and I had turned 18 just a couple months before that. And after a period of time, when I was done nursing, I started drinking and using again. And my husband and I had a very rocky relationship. It was violent sometimes. I got pregnant again when I was 19. And I had my second child, another son, 2 weeks after I turned 20. If my birthday falls on a Monday, his birthday is two Mondays after that, literally 2 weeks after. And, I did the same thing. I didn't use when I was pregnant. I started partying again after I was done nursing him. During that pregnancy, my father died. It was a month before I had my baby. And it was very sudden, and it really...
Take your time.
Affected me, my whole family. And so I had my baby. I had gotten separated from my husband right after that. We were living with my parents when I was pregnant that time. So he found us a place to live. I went back, moved in with him with the two kids. And, you know, before you know it, we're getting drunk and high and partying and just thinking we're having a great time. You know, but the reality is that the paycheck would get spent before there was food in the refrigerator. And then it was, he'd save just enough money so that we could eat. There were times that I literally ate cornmeal mush so that my kids could have eggs. And we lived on rice and beans, because that's just the way it was. And as the disease of addiction kept rearing its ugly head with my husband, it became dangerous to be together. And I left the marriage. I left him, I took my kids, and I moved in with my mom. And for a while, I did really well. And then I started drinking again, because now I was a free woman and I could have fun. And my mom would watch the kids and I would just have a good time. I still did the same things I did before. Years passed where I was drinking. I'd have times of being mostly sober and not doing other substances. I met my current husband in California, and then we moved to Pennsylvania. And for a long time when I got here, the only thing I did was drink. And it wasn't all the time. I mean, I went to school, I worked, I was a functioning human being. And then somewhere along the line, somebody that I met introduced me back to some of the old substances I did. And it was just like crazy. I used, I worked, I was a mom. Then I got to where I couldn't work and I wasn't a good mom, and I put my kids through hell. And I have a lot of guilt for that. A lot. And shame. It was awful. And then I got pregnant again. Rebecca, I weighed 94 pounds.
Wow.
When I got pregnant.
And how tall are you?
I'm 5'5 and a half.
94 pounds.
94 pounds. I didn't even know I was pregnant. I thought I just didn't have a period anymore because I was so thin, because that's what happens. And when I found out I was pregnant, it was like, oh my God, how did this even happen? I had a doctor tell me, because of things that happened in my first marriage, I would never have kids again, ever. So it was like a miracle that I was even pregnant. And so right before I found out I was pregnant, somebody had called Children and Youth on me. And so I was involved with the Children and Youth, and they, you know, said, you need to go somewhere and get away from this area and recover and, you know, change your life. And my sister and my mom came out, and I went with my sister to Oregon, and I found out I was pregnant 2 days before I moved. And I wasn't married at that time, but I went, and things began to change for me there. I wasn't perfect. I made some mistakes and relapsed a couple times. Actually, I relapsed a lot in the beginning, but and of course Children and Youth there got involved with me, and they helped get me into a program. When I had my baby, they helped get me into a program where I could get rehab, outpatient rehab, and I went every day. And one of the ladies took me to my first 12-step meeting. And I still have the book that she gave me that went along with that program to this day. And that was 27 years ago. Yeah. I relapsed a couple of times, but in November, this November, I will have 28 years sober and drug free.
Wow.
That was an, you know, it's been an interesting journey. Sobriety and recovery have been very interesting. It was not easy at first. I had lots of days when I would have to keep my hands busy because I was so used to doing things that kept me very active and busy and my mind always going. So I would get clothes from Goodwill in a bag. You could buy a 10-cent bag. And I would take the buttons off. I collect buttons. It's my thing. And I would cut it up and I would tie this fabric together and I would crochet blankets. And you know, those were my like 15-second days, you know. I had lots of 15-second days when I just made it 15 seconds at a time. And then it became 2-hour days and then 3-hour days. And then it was just, I could get through a day and then it was one day at a time and all of that. And in this process, I had these two children that were angry and confused, and I was responsible for that, you know, like I had to deal with my part in that. There were issues, a lot of issues. Both of my boys ended up in juvenile hall and in trouble with the law. My one son was drunk and his girlfriend had called me, I think he was 12 years old, and riding his bike around. So I, you know, I'm like, okay, have you been drinking? And he's like, no. And I said, okay, fine. But I know you're drunk. I can tell. And I ended up confronting him and holding him accountable. I got him breathalyzed at the police station. And he lied up until the minute that the police officer said it was point something. I forget. That was a long time ago. But it was just like crazy because it was like I was watching my insanity in my children. And, you know, of course, Children and Youth gets involved if you have a 12-year-old who's drunk. But this time it wasn't because of something I actively was doing. And but we got counseling and we had people come to the house and it was a good program. You know, it wasn't like this horrible thing. A lot of people have horrible experiences with children and youth, and I never did. I never did. I don't know if it was God watching over us or if it was just the timing, or I don't know. I just know that it helped us. Mm-hmm. It got us services and everything. But as time went on, you know, I was at juvenile hall a lot. I was in court a lot. I almost lost a job because I was in court so much for my kids. And, you know, the public defender is like, you need to come because then it shows the judge that, you know, you're supporting your child. And I'm like, I know, but I have to eat and I have to pay my bills. And my boss said, if I take another day off for this, then I'll lose my job. And I couldn't do that because I had this little baby. But I'm going to backtrack a little bit because this is an important part of my story, is that when I had this little baby that had its whole life ahead of him, and I had this angry child who fought with me physically, pushed me in different things, and then I had this person who had a life with no story. That was the moment that I knew I had to be a better mom. And I could not be the same mom for that child. He needed someone different. And I had to be someone different. So that meant I had to change. So when Children and Youth came and said, "You're clean, the baby's clean, we can walk away right now, or we can put you in that program." When I said to her, "No, I want to do your program because I can't do this by myself. That was the first time those words ever came out of my mouth. So
it takes being strong to say you need help.
Yes. It was the bravest thing I ever did in my entire life. Up to that point. I've done a lot of brave things since then. But up until that point, that was the biggest. I have continued my 12-step journey through all of this with a few relapses in there before November of 1994. That was the last day I smoked pot. That was the day I said no more. They were going to take my baby if I kept smoking weed. And I was just like, oh my God, like, what am I doing?
So since then, a lot has happened.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, you've continued to make brave choices and become stronger and stronger.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. So I have children that are in their 30s. And a 28-year-old, and they have all suffered through addiction issues. And as a mother, I went through different stages. There was the, I can fix you, I'm going to fix you, I'm going to make it better. You know, my one son, I found out he was doing heroin. He was 18. I had to tell him he couldn't do that and live in our house. And he couch surfed, lived on the street off and on. And I would go to the town where I knew he was and I would feed him. I'd make sure he ate that day, made sure he did, you know, was safe. And it was consuming to me. And the guilt and the shame and the anger that I felt towards myself was horrific. And I couldn't change anything in any of them. There was times I went to juvenile hall for the one, and the county jail, which they call a prison, was like right next door. So I'd go visit one in one facility, and then I'd go to the other facility to visit the other one. I did that every weekend for I don't even know how long. Yeah, it it was painful for everyone. So as the kids have gotten older and have grown and changed, and they're not constantly in trouble anymore. So as the kids have gotten older and grown and, you know, learned in some ways how not to get in trouble and in other ways to make better decisions, there have been times that they have gotten angry and lashed out at me. Blamed me for their entire lives being the way that their lives were. And it used to wreck me. It used to just rip me to shreds because they were right in a lot of ways. But then at a point, you become an adult. You know you're doing something you shouldn't do, and you keep doing it anyway. And a lot of times, the things that they used those had complete control. You know, you literally get sick if you don't keep using heroin. You literally get sick and you feel like you're going to die. And it is this powerful, baffling disease. And you can't fathom the pain a mother goes through, or a father, or a sister, or a brother, aunt, uncle, grandma, all of them go through watching someone literally destroy themselves and keep doing it. Like, my one son's been in 25 rehabs and he's still using. And he lived on the street in a horrible, horrible area of Philadelphia. I would go look for him just to make sure he was alive. And I put myself in some shady situations just to find out if he was alive, you know? But one day, you know, all this time I'm like, I'm doing 12-step meetings. I go to Al-Anon, and I recommend that for any family struggling with somebody in any kind of addiction, is to find the Al-Anon that fits that addiction, or just plain Al-Anon, because it will help. Support groups are going to keep you sane. They're going to keep you alive, and they're going to keep you knowing that you are not alone is huge, because we all think we're alone. I thought I was alone in my addiction. Then I woke up and I caused a train wreck in my life and my kids' lives.
Rizal, and I know this has not been easy for you, and I so appreciate you taking the time to share your story, because I know that it will speak to so many others and give hope in what is possible. You have been through so much, your babies have been through so much, and though you can't take any of that back, there are things that you are doing, your outlook, your actions, your words, that make from today forward a different story. So thank you so much for sharing this with us. And every time I turn on the TV, every time I'm listening to music, drugs are involved. I mean, not every time. Let me take that back. But so often, if we're in the secular world, we are in this world. We're not of it if we're believers, but we are in this world. And every time we turn around, we see things going on that involve addiction of so many different levels, so many different types. You are listening to Better by the Minute Life with Becca on KSCO 1080 AM Santa Cruz. We will be right back after this break.
Last week, we talked about mental illness and how nutrition plays a big role in overcoming and how we can support our bodies when it comes to this fight. Because our bodies are not just fighting to survive. For many of us, we are in a survival mode, and especially with those who are caught in an addiction. And it doesn't matter if it's a food addiction, if it's a drug addiction, if it's an alcohol addiction, our bodies are fighting to survive and craving things that aren't necessarily healthy for us because it's not getting what it needs. Now, Ruth Ellen, as a mother on this journey, and now seeing your kids struggling with some of the addictions that you went through in their younger years, what is or what are some of the hardest things that you have had to do? And what have you learned?
The biggest amends I've had to make is to myself. Because I couldn't forgive that part of me that did that, all that stuff. I couldn't forgive her. It took me a really long time to even love that part of myself. And I understand that my kids have to go through that same thing. You know, I gave blankets to where we only had enough blankets for the beds in our house because it gave away all our extra blankets and it gets cold where we live. And I did everything I could. And then when I would see my one son, well, both of my older sons, I would say, you know, you got to stop doing this. This isn't right. You're hurting yourselves and, you know, you're hurting your kids and, you know, that kind of thing. And then I was sitting in a restaurant with my son, my middle son, and I looked at him and I heard this little voice in the back of my mind. God, probably, I'm going to say, do you have to be right? Do you have to be right?
Do you have to be right?
Do you have to be right? You may never see him alive again. Do you have to be right? Do you have to convince him there's another way? Or do you have to love him right where he is, for who he is, and how he is, and what he is? He is a child in the grip of addiction. Even though he's a man, he's still a child. And everything shifted for me that day. Because I don't have to be right. I don't have to have all the answers. I don't have to show the way. All I have to do is be me, do a living amends, stay sober no matter what. And I've had a lot of what and a lot of loss and things that I thought were going to break me in half. But here I am talking to you. And I love my kids no matter what they're doing and no matter where they're at. I get angry. I walk away. I try not to fight. I accept responsibility. Yes, I hurt you in the past. I shouldn't have, you know, whatever it was that I did, that they're telling me. I have to acknowledge that. And I have to apologize. And sometimes with my one son, I apologize like hundreds of times already. But I mean them. Every apology is meant from my heart and my soul. And even though my one son is still out there actively using, I have a good relationship with him. When something is wrong, he calls me because he knows I'm not going to say, well, it's the way you live your life. Like, what the heck do you think you're doing? If you keep doing that, that's, you know, the same thing's just going to keep happening. No, he gets, are you okay? Tell me what's going on. Do you need help? Now, I want to clarify that I only feed my children. I do not give them money. I do not buy them cigarettes. I will give them rides. But other than that, I do not do all the stuff I used to do. Like, I used to give money. I used to buy them cigarettes. I used to do this and that. I will only support their physical health. I give them supplements. I make sure that if they need a doctor, that if they can't get to one on their own, that they get there. And I support them. I support their children and their wives and girlfriends, ex-wives. It's my ones that got divorced. And I have a very good relationship with her. And I am super grateful for her. I can only do that. And love. And I show up in court when I need to. And I had to testify for one of my kids. That was kind of, she reduced his sentence because of my testimony, because he got in trouble for having a knife on him in the school zone, but he was homeless and that was a tool that he used to make shelter and build fires and eat with. So she took some time off of that sentence. But other than that, the things that I would say to somebody else who it goes through this or is going through it is that you need to have a support system and you need to love yourself and forgive yourself. And sometimes that's really hard. I put my kids every day in God's hands. And I just picture that picture with Jesus's hands are cupped. And there have been times that I've literally pictured myself picking up my one son and laying him in those hands. All of my kids have been there. But when he was 2 years in Kensington, that was horrific. I know God has a plan for me and for them. And I don't know what else to say.
You have come a long way. You've had quite a journey that you are now able to use to help others without judgment. And that's one thing.
Now it's my turn. We'll do it together.
And that's one thing that I have loved and appreciated about you.
Thank you.
You know, me not knowing all of your story, you not knowing all of my story, there have been parallels. Where I didn't have the addiction. But I did things in my life that my son has blamed me for his. And he lives on the streets as yours. And has been in and out of prison. So moms, dads, grandmas, grandpas, if you're out there and you know where we're at, we're coming to you with no judgment. No judgment at all. When choosing a support system, I invite you to choose one that is holistic. Ruth Ellen has found support systems that now I think is just absolutely incredible because she leads groups in helping people in similar situations to be the best that they can be and having that life history, that journey through addiction and through sobriety to be able to help others do the same.
Yeah. because we're human and we do stupid things in sobriety too. You know, let me rephrase that. Because we're human and we make mistakes in sobriety as well.
Well, I think being human, no matter how good or bad our childhood was, we all have free will. And I have been told many times what a horrible mom I am. But the same person has told me what a good mom that I've been.
It's a powerful statement when the child that hated you says, "Mom, I know I've been a butt. And you've stood by me no matter what. And you have loved me. And I'm so grateful for that." My kids have said that.
And that's where the segment of Better by the Minute Life with Becca plays in loving and accepting each other, our children, through their journey. Because life is a journey. And there's going to be times where all we can do is emotionally and physically support somebody without it being enabling or creating another codependency.
Right. And holding them accountable with love.
Holding them accountable with love, absolutely.
And not judgment.
No judgment. And understanding that every day is a new day. Yeah. And that's a tough one.
Yes. It took a long time. And a still, quiet voice.
Yes.
Saying, "This might be the last time you see him alive." And I've used that with everyone in my life. When I get angry and upset, and with my other children, you know, I've struggled. And I have to remember that, because there are times I just want to take control because I'm a mom, and it's our innate desire thing that we want to do with our kids, you know. And my two of my children have moved on to doing their own maintenance substances that help them not do heroin. And, you know, my one son became a welder, and my other son is going to school. And my son that is still actively using, he went to school and became an electrician. And right now he's not utilizing that, but there is hope for that life. There is hope for that.
Absolutely. Now, is there anything that you have done beyond support groups to help yourself and being able to come back? Because 94 pounds at 5'6", that's like skin and bones.
Yeah, it was very scary for me. I have a picture I carry quite often when I'm having a hard time. I'm maybe 100 pounds in this picture, and I'm tying a shoe, and my leg is up on the bed, and all you can see is bone through my pants. I weighed 118 pounds after I gave birth. It took a couple, like 6 weeks after I had my baby, I went back down to 118 pounds. When I first got sober, I gained a lot of weight because I substituted food for alcohol and other things. I didn't eat healthy, and I was an emotional wreck. I had traumatized myself. I had been traumatized during my addiction. I had things happen to me that I wouldn't wish on any human alive or dead. I wouldn't wish on anyone. And all of that stuff started to surface when I wasn't getting high. I couldn't numb it. I saw the program that I was in helped me get into see a PTSD specialist. So I've done counseling. I've done parents groups, support groups. You know, I gained weight. I went all the way up from 94 pounds to 235 pounds because I ate my feelings. I didn't eat healthy. I was a total sugar addict. And I looked in the mirror one day and I was like, oh my God, who is that? And then I went shopping because I would wear my husband's pants. And so, because he was bigger then than he is now, but I would wear his pants and then they didn't fit anymore. And I had to go shopping and I was a size 22. I had severe health problems. I was sick all the time. My joints hurt. My body hurt. I was sick. And I started changing my eating habits. And I started supplementing with good nutrition, good nutritional supplements that were amazing. They are amazing. I quit eating sugar and I started to focus on me because I needed to focus on me because I'd focus on everyone else and I ate all those feelings. And I did therapies off and on. But my 12-step program has been a lifesaver, and I bounced between two of them, and then I found my home in the one I go to now, and I do service work with them, or for them, as for my group, I should say. And I wouldn't be sober if it wasn't for the ladies and the family that I've gotten there. But the one thing that is super important to me is that I had to look at my whole person, not just part of me, not just my fat, not just my achy joints, not just the way I felt about myself. I had to look at my whole person, my whole self. I became very involved in helping other people get healthy and became a coach to a lot of people. And I became a certified holistic health coach 2 years ago, and I lost a lot of weight. I'm down to, I had lost a little more weight. I gained a little bit back during COVID. I think everybody did. But I weigh 173 pounds now, and I feel so much better than I did. I had to learn to look inside. I had to learn to love Ruth Ellen. I remember right before I moved that I would put on makeup. I never looked myself in the eye, ever. Mm-hmm. I would put on makeup. I would look at my forehead. I would look at my eyebrow. I would look at my cheeks, you know, wherever I was putting the makeup on. I would look at that part. I would look at my eyelashes when I put mascara on, but I never, ever looked myself in the eye at the end of my addiction. Never. You know, people say, oh, that's impossible. No, let me tell you, it is possible because I was terrified and I hated that person. She frightened me because she didn't care about anything. And let me tell you, Becca, I put myself in places that were very dangerous. And like I said before, bad things happened. So one of the key things that I had to do, one of my sponsors told me, you need to sit in front of a mirror and you need to look yourself in the eye and you need to say, I love you, Ruth Ellen. And I had to do that. And then I got to where I did it. I love you. And then all the last names I've ever had in my life, which, you know, which is three. But I had to learn to love me. And I had to know that I'm a child of God. And Jesus died on the cross for me and everyone else in the world. And whatever your religious belief is, you have to know that your version of God or your higher power loves you for who you are, warts and all. Doesn't matter. And I had to learn to do that with myself.
That's one of the hardest things that some of us have to do.
It is. I used to only be able to say it once. And I cried the whole time. You know, I put myself in God's hands quite often. Let me tell you.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with putting yourself in God's hands. Good times, bad times. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that we can go at any time.
Yes, me too.
Absolutely. And then to have friends that we can go there with, mm-hmm. that we can love and cry with.
Yes.
And say, I love you, Ruth Ellen. Thank you for loving me.
I love you, Becca. And thank you for loving me.
And I wish, that's my wish for everybody, is that you can create or be part of a community where you have the love and the support of one another unconditionally. And in families, sometimes you don't have that. But remember that you're not alone. There are others that also are craving that friendship, that community that they can be part of, or you can be part of theirs and make a better, stronger community where we can learn to love ourselves, learn to love each other, and come out stronger on the other side.
I agree. And do it with compassion.
And do it with compassion, but truly being part of a community that loves and supports each other. Well, you are listening to, and that was a hard one, people. It opens up to even more conversations in the future in regards to this, because I know and I'm learning I am not alone in this journey of having a child that has chosen addiction or addiction has chosen him. Yet I love him unconditionally where he's at, and I always will.
Exactly. Exactly. And one thing people need to remember is that when you look at somebody, you don't know their story. They may be having the worst day of their life and trying to fake it. And they may be cranky and bitchy and whatever you want to call it. Just be compassionate. Be kind.
Absolutely. And sometimes that kindness is as simple as a smile. Hello. Mm-hmm. Can I get the door for you? Yes. Simple things.
As a mother of someone caught in addiction, I know there are others out there like us looking for answers, those who have been struggling to forgive themselves, not knowing how to fix a situation. As moms, we want to be fixers. We want to help, but it's helping without enabling. Now we start with us. We learn how to love ourselves where we're at, so that we can love others where they are at. And in finding a community that is supportive in this journey is very helpful. Go to my website, betterbytheminutelife.com. There's a lot of meaning behind this series that is going to be coming in the next coming weeks. And I know I'm not alone. So this may not speak to you personally, but as I said, the information that I bring each week, I pray will be empowering, if not to you, to somebody else that you can share this program with. Because I know there's a lot of hurting people out there. As I'm looking at statistics, it's just unbelievable that this year alone, there has been a 30% increase in drug overdose deaths. In the past year, there's been over 96,000 people die of drug overdoses. 72% of those, that's 7 out of 10, are from opioids. And since 1999, there have been 1 million people die because of a drug overdose. 1 million in just over 10 years. And for us here in California, we have the highest overdose rate of all the states, all of them. Our total annual overdose deaths are more than 1,000 than the next state below us, and double many of the other populated states. Something needs to be done, and it starts with us. Over the next few weeks, I have invited people coming with different stories in their start, approach, and recovery of addiction and what they do to help them keep sober. And there are the things that they find important, whether it's community, whether it's health, whatever it is. I have different viewpoints that we will be sharing, including that of a drug counselor, a mental illness counselor, and a doctor who also has a doctorate in psychology who specializes in mental illness and addictions. So I hope that you stick with us here on Better by the Minute Life with Becca, as this program is, in my hope, to be a resource for yourself or others in finding hope and being empowered in what you can do on a day-to-day without being dependent on something else or other drugs. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back with you next week.
Well, you are listening to Better by the Minute Life with Becca on KSCO 1080 AM Santa Cruz. Bye for now.